All right, the champ is here. We now welcome in Bucks linebacker, now Super Bowl champion, Lavonte David. Lavonte, first of all, huge congratulations. What a game that was on Sunday. Really, the Bucks did the unthinkable. I don't think anybody expected that the Chiefs would be unable to score zero touchdowns in the Super Bowl. But hey, you and your D, you pulled it off. So how were you able to do that?
Thank you, guys, for having me, first and foremost. And that Super Bowl champion got a nice ring to it behind my name. You know, I like the sound
yes,
of that.
It does.
But, you know, all in all, man, it was a great game plan put together by Coach Bowles and the staff. We had 2 weeks to game plan. We had 2 weeks to basically look at what we messed up on when we first played them and try to take away those things that we did give up. And we was able to do that. We was able to let our D-line go out there and rush and have fun. And everybody on the back end had great technique, great coverages. And we always talk about rush and coverage work together. And we was able to put together a great performance, in my opinion. And everybody was out there having fun. And that was the main thing that helped us get over it. We was just out there having fun and playing football like we know how to play.
You're part of the best linebackers group in the NFL. You look over here, there's Devin White. You look over here, there's Shaquille Barrett. There's you. And then you look at the front four. Vita Vea's back. And here's JPP. I mean, it's Ndamukong Suh. It's ridiculous what's on the front seven. And you were going up against an offensive line missing both offensive tackles. So when you look around and see the talent around you and the talent that you are, and you're looking at that Chiefs O-line, what are you thinking going into that game?
I mean, obviously, we're licking our chops. We felt like we was on a hot streak throughout the whole playoffs. I feel like everybody was playing at a real high level. You know, it's unfortunate that those guys lost their offensive tackles, but, you know, I guess it's a part of the game, man. You lose people through injury, but we was fortunate enough to have all our guys. And, I mean, obviously, we feel like our guys was better than their guys. And we were just able to let them just go out there and hunt, man. They took advantage of that opportunity. And those guys just out there dominating. I mean, we talked about it all practice. We gotta get as much pressure as we can on 15 to try to, you know, disrupt them as much as we can, and everything else will fall in place.
All right, so obviously a very talented line already, but what was the big change? What did you really feel in the shift in energy once Tom Brady arrived?
Oh, man, it was a big shift, especially when he first signed, and the news first broke. You know, he reached out to a lot of guys. He reached out to a lot of the veterans. He reached out to a lot of guys that's already on the roster. Just basically saying, man, he's coming in to help us win the championship. And because that's something that he wanted to do, and that's definitely something that this program needed. You know, the past 8 years haven't been going well for us. We only had one winning season the past 8 years. And this is our second winning season in 9 years. So he definitely wanted to come in and try to change that. You know, he knew he had the weapons to work with, and he knew he had the defense to work with. So we was able to get that done. Just his attitude, man, just his work ethic, his whole aura about him, it's just different. And you felt like we could go places with these guys, our quarterback, obviously. And it showed up.
One way it manifested itself, I thought, Lavonte, was after that loss to the Bears, where Brady makes a mental error that you don't normally see, and he criticized the O-line. The one thing I was watching for the next week is these dudes are going to be on point next week. Does he address the defense too? Like, how did you notice leadership in that moment? Because you guys came back and spanked a Packers team that wasn't losing at the time.
Yeah, most
especially
definitely.
Defensively.
Yeah, most definitely. He addressed the offense, and guys on defense addressed the defense. That's one thing about him. You know, he controlled what he controlled, and he controlled the offense, and he let the leaders on defense control the defense. And the main thing he said, we can't beat ourselves, guys. We can't beat ourselves. Throughout that whole football game, it was just a lot of dumb, stupid errors that game as far as penalties and things like that.
We lose him?
Green Bay and such. Like that with all those pins and stuff. We was able to, you know, cancel all that out.
Speechless. All right. Yeah, Lavonte, thank you so much. Look, you have so much going on. You're speechless at this point. We're just going to go with that. But thank you so much again, Super Bowl champion Lavonte David. Thanks for joining First Take. And
Charlie,
he's a free agent this offseason, folks. So guess what? Oh, yeah.
Charlie, that's the killer. We got to get Lavonte David back because He's a free agent, and it is hard to keep Super Bowl champions together. But they can franchise guys. They can sign certain guys. Levante's been there for a long time. He's a great linebacker. He still seems to be, you know, functioning on a very high level. But he is from Miami. Miami's got cap room. Miami is a couple, like, his future is the most, to me, is the most interesting on the team. You figure them to retain their other free agents. But Levante in particular, his free agency future, I think, is the most interesting question heading into the Bucs offseason.
Okay, so Max, real quick, do you think he's going to stay with the Bucs or go elsewhere?
I think so. I think they got to keep this group together. I think they deserve a chance to defend their title. And Levante in particular is so identified with the team, it's hard to imagine them making another run at it and he's not on the team. But there will be suitors for his services, and they're going to come with cash.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take Podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, we have seen some pretty brilliant offense this year across the league and some of the NBA's best scorers, notably, of course, Steph Curry. They're still performing at an ultra high level. There's some obvious setbacks, but they're still doing their thing. And you can check out Steph's amazing layup from last night. And look, we got to bring in Kendrick Perkins for this one because seeing this layup here got me thinking. Perk, who do you think is the better shot maker? Is it Steph Curry or is it Kyrie Irving?
Oh, this is an easy one, Charlie. I mean, it's a landslide. And it's Steph Curry. You talking about a guy that changed the game, a generational talent that made bad shots cool to take in today's game. You just don't get that often. Steph Curry is a guy that we probably would never see again in this lifetime. We talking about the greatest shooter of all time, the guy that made it cool for everyone like Dame Dolla and Trae Young to be pulling up from the logo. We even see LeBron James doing it. A guy that is a career shooter of 48% from the field. You really don't get that out of a point guard. And when you look at what Steph does, the way that he's able to create for himself, the difficulty of the shots that he makes over guys that are taller than him. And it's not just three-pointers. It's not just mid-range. It's the point that he's able to get in the paint and finish with circus shots like you just put on a preview, or floaters and things of that nature. Steph Curry is one of one. He's a generational talent, and he changed the game of basketball. He made it cool for people to take bad shots now, and it's okay. Like, people actually working on those shots in practice, pulling up for the logo. So, to me, it's not even close. No knock on Kyrie. I think he's a better creator, but he's not a better shot maker than Steph Curry. And if anybody disagree, they crazy.
Steph Curry is the greatest shooter of all time. And with the exception of your conclusion, I agree with everything you said, but I don't agree with the conclusion. Steph Curry from the outside is one of one. He also has great, his handles are ridiculous, and he can finish in the paint, you know, almost as well as anyone. So from the outside, Steph is a better shot maker. Now, Kyrie Irving can shoot from the outside at an elite level, but no one is Steph Curry. Not even Damian Lillard from the outside is Steph Curry. but no one in the history of the game finishes better than Kyrie Irving in the paint under the basket. He has the greatest layup package of layups in the history of basketball. No one, not even better, no one has ever done it as well. Also, as great as Steph's handles are, Kyrie's are even better. Steph is a greater player than Kyrie. He is more unselfish. He's a better shooter, all that stuff. But if we're just talking about shot making, Steph from the outside, Kyrie from the inside. But Steph is great on the inside and Kyrie's great on the outside. But Steph is the best ever from the outside. Kyrie is the best ever on the inside. And now it comes down to, if those two things cancel, the clutch. Now, let me tell you something, Perk. Steph Curry has become a clutch player. He's become in the finals. But until this two finals ago, Steph Curry consistently didn't shoot as well and didn't play as well the deeper you went into the playoffs. No, I don't take any joy or pleasure in saying that, but it's a fact. I saw him run the greatest half-court offense in the history of basketball for 73 wins. But in the finals, last 422, at Oracle against LeBron's team and Kyrie's team, they didn't make a single shot. And that included Steph Curry not taking them, not making them, and throwing the ball away. Kyrie Irving, you can say a lot, whatever you want to say about him. Kyrie has always been a dude where when the ball is in his hands at the end of a game, you feel very good about him taking that shot. So who's a better shot maker? Steph from the outside, Kyrie from the inside. And I'll say this, Steph has now caught Kyrie in the clutch, but it didn't used to be that way.
Well, Max, you still haven't given me a clear-cut answer. You straddling the fence. I thought this was take. Will you stand behind what you said to me? You just chose Steph and Kyrie. You got to pick one. You can't straddle the fence. Tell me which one you picking.
It's a dead heat, Perk. A dead heat. Steph from the outside, Kyrie on the inside.
No, I know right now.
Listen, you're the one who said it's not close.
It's not close. It's not close. When you look at a guy like Steph Curry that took a relevant again, and he was the top dog. He was the top dog. By guess what? When he was in the lottery every single year. So don't come giving me nothing about
not talking about who's a greater player.
Steve,
we're talking about who's
a
better shot maker.
I'm telling you, because you brought up clutch moments. Steph Curry been in those clutch moments. See, Max, the thing about you that I really don't like is that you always remember what happens in the finals, but you forget what happened in the first round, the second round, the third round. All that is the makeup of winning the championship.
True.
And guys are key in those rounds. Steph Curry, we have said time and time again, yes, he hasn't won the finals MVP, and I'm okay with that. But guess what? Up until the finals, he has arguably been the best player in the playoffs alongside LeBron James when he was making those runs in Golden State. So don't give me that Steph ain't clutch, because I didn't watch him hit a dagger in New Orleans. I didn't watch him hit a few daggers against the Houston Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. But when we talk about the best shot maker ever, the best shot maker ever, Steph Curry ranks up there with the best of them. And right now, he's the best shot maker in today's game. And he's the most efficient at the point guard position, especially the most efficient shot maker in today's game.
Let me tell you what I don't like about you. Nothing really. I get it. I enjoy you. But the point is this, Perk. The point is this. You say I forget what happened leading up to the finals. It's not that I forget.
You do.
It's that each round, the importance goes up. The significance goes up. If you talk about the most clutch moments, of course they're going to happen in the finals. Second most clutch will be in the conference finals, and so on. And what I'm saying is, one of the things in Kyrie's favor, even though Steph shoots it's better from the outside, and Kyrie's better in the paint, one of the things going in Kyrie's favor is that in clutch moments through his whole career, you always felt very comfortable with Kyrie taking those shots because you knew his performance wasn't going to fall off. Now, Steph's doesn't fall off anymore, but for years there, it was like, where'd Steph's shot go when you needed it most? Let's be honest.
Yeah, you know what, Charlie? I know Stephen A. is livid right now because, listen, Max, you still haven't answered the question. This is First Take. You can't straddle the fence. Give us an answer. It ain't Steph.
Tell me about it.
It's Steph
take.
On the outside
I'm
and
going
Kyrie
at
in the
you.
Inside. No, I'm going at you because you're straddling the fence. I told you who was the greatest shot maker out of the two. It's Steph Curry, and it's not even a debate. You are straddling the fence. Who is the better shot maker, Max? Steph Curry or Kyrie?
Kyrie Irving is the better shot maker because he can do it on the inside better than Steph. He can also do it on the outside, and he's done it under pressure his whole career. Always under pressure in the clutch.
That's so disrespectful. Wow.
Hey, Perk, I didn't know what he was going to say because you finished up your initial argument saying if he disagreed with you, he'd be crazy. So, I don't know. Did Max just prove himself to be crazy? I don't know.
Yes.
Hey, look,
yes.
Also, Perk, I got to back
you
up.
I'll tell you this. It is a dead heat. It's a photo finish, Charlie. But if you're going to make me choose in a dead heat, that's my choice.
All right, well, look, Steph Curry already this season has scored 741 points. Only one player has ever done that, exceeded that in the first 25 games of the season at age 32 or older. Michael Jordan.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right. What do you say now? We welcome in Terrence J. He's not only an HBCU alum of North Carolina AT&T. Don't let me get that confused with Stephen A.'s alma mater, which we're going to get to in just a second. Also, author, actor. You've seen him all over the place. He was on 106th and Park back in the day, one of my favorite shows growing up. Also, E! News. So, Terrence, all right, you went to North Carolina AT&T. Stephen A., unfortunately, not here today. He went to Winston-Salem University. So what message do you have for Stephen A.?
He knows where he wanted to go. North Carolina A&T, best HBCU in the world. I'm going to send you this jacket. He knows where he actually wanted to go. But much love to all HBCUs. I love Stephen A. Smith. And, if you went to an HBCU, I got love for you either way.
Today we recognized Howard University, the alma mater of the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris. What is the significance for you that the Vice President of the United States of America went to an HBCU?
Max, listen to me, man. I remember, seeing the Howard University marching band escorting her on Inauguration Day down streets I've walked through a million times. And the significance of seeing this intelligent, strong, incredible leadership, this phenomenal woman that's in one of the highest offices in the land, went to an HBCU. She could have went anywhere. So I think it's a testament to the output of HBCUs. I think it's a calling signal to anybody out there that's looking at colleges that you can go to a black college and make it to the top for sure.
Do you feel like attending an HBCU really was the reason that your life went in the direction that it did?
Oh, 100%. I didn't get accepted into other colleges when I applied. And HBCU took a chance on me. So if it wasn't for an HBCU, I wouldn't even have that opportunity.
How? Could you describe the experience and why you feel that way?
Listen, we have such passionate professors, so the education is always on point. but the cultural significance, the legacy, the amount that we pour into students, the amount of love that was poured into me, the mentorship that I had when I was on the yard, all of it prepared me for success. And when I came out of school, the relationships, the pride, it doesn't matter if you went to A&T, Winston, Howard, you know, Morehouse, wherever you went, FAMU, there's a love and a camaraderie when you go to an HBCU. So for anybody out there, man, if you're considering going to college as a young person, make sure you put HBCUs at the top of your list, historically black colleges.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like you made the right decision, but I'm sure all the other universities that you might have applied to probably kicking themselves for not admitting you. But Max, listen, Terrence is also doing something else right. He's a Giants fan. If you didn't know, Max recently made the case that Eli Manning's Super Bowl runs more impressive than Tom Brady's this season. So what do you think about that?
Both of them.
So I got to rock with Max. Listen, that 2008 game when the Patriots had the best record in the league, undefeated that year, and you watch your man Eli Manning go out there at the end of the game, Super Bowl, after they just lost to the Patriots in the last regular season game, throw that helmet pass, then the pass to Plaxico Burress for the win. That was the biggest game I've ever seen in my life. So, I mean, for me, that Giants run in particular was my favorite, but I can't come on here without giving so much love and respect to Tom Brady. We are watching history, what he's able to do at this age. It's unbelievable. So I got to give my hats off to Tom Brady. But of course, for any Giants fan, we hold on to that very near and dear 2008 and then a couple years later to win those two chips. Yeah. You know, there's nothing like it.
And you're also a Lakers fan, Giants and Lakers. I found another one like me. I sold out my Knicks because Dolan won't sell the team when I moved out to LA to do radio out there years ago. So it's Giants and Lakers. And we got LeBron on the Lakers, right? And the issue is, even though he's still the best player in the world and is going to work on a second of back-to-back championships this year, to get on Lakers Mount Rushmore, it's almost impossible. Like, do you think that LeBron has a chance to get on the Lakers Mount Rushmore?
I do. I think he has a chance the way he's going, obviously. But for me, you have to be on a team for at least 5 to 6 seasons before I can consider you the best of that franchise, right? And when you're coming from a legacy, you know, that has Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Wilt, you know, for me, the greatest Laker of all time is Kobe Bryant. So it's hard to put LeBron in that company just because he hasn't had enough years on the team. But, I mean, listen, we're going to win the chip this year in 5. We going to pull that thing back next year and see what happens. And then we can have that conversation about the Lakers. We can have that LeBron conversation after that.
Okay, so we'll wait to have that conversation. But as the former host of 106th and Park, again, one of my favorite shows of all time, I got to ask you, who is the GOAT of hip-hop?
Great show.
I got to go with Jay-Z. I got to go with the Jigga Man, what Jay has been able to do.
I respect it.
You know, my GOAT for basketball is LeBron, and my GOAT for hip-hop is Jay-Z. So I got to go with those two all day.
Well, you're
Max,
half
you're
right. It's Jordan and Jay-Z. But is there even an argument for someone other than Jay-Z? Is there even an argument considering how long he's been at it at that level? Who's in second place? Who's in second place in the history of hip-hop behind Jay-Z? Because first place is locked up.
If we're talking dead or alive, you know, I mean, we're talking Tupac conversations and we're talking Biggie conversations, those are different conversations. We're talking alive right now. Nobody's done it like Drake. I mean, anybody that doesn't really appreciate what you're watching with Drake right now is, you know, you're being a hater. What Drake has been able to do with hit after hit is phenomenal. The fact that we're in a time right now where you can watch Tom Brady play football, watch LeBron James play basketball at age 36 with no look passes to Trez, and be able to watch Drake put out hit after hit. We are living in unprecedented times of greatness, and I'm just happy to be able to witness it and to be able to wake up and watch First Take. Life is good.
Life is good. I got to agree with you there. Terrence, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being a part of HBCU Wednesday. Of course, here we got actor alum also. Actor, author, and alum of an HBCU himself, North Carolina A&T. So, Terrence, represent. We want to see you send that jacket to Stephen A.
It's coming in the mail right now.
Thanks for talking to us today.
A little hat for him, too.
University.
Love y'all.
All right. Terrence, hey, thank you so much. Good to see you. All right, and now it is time for some Howard University students to take their turn at producing. A few of them have submitted some debate topics for the fellas today, and we welcome Ryan Clark back in with us. So, gentlemen, let's start with the junior political science major, Kylie Burke, who has a question for us.
My question is, what modern-day sports history event or moment are you most looking forward to being made into a movie one day?
Max?
Oh. That's a great question. I mean, I think of LeBron beating that Warriors team in terms of the pure athletic competition, but I also think about the WNBA during this pandemic and what happened with Kelly Loeffler and her team when she was against Black Lives Matter and they wore Warnock, you know, gear, and Warnock wound up getting elected in the special election in Georgia. And that may be even like more interesting socially in terms of even if it's not an athletic moment exactly.
Yeah, and mine was very similar. I think they should make a movie called The Bubble. Think about all the things that went on athletically and also politically, socially, while the NBA was in the bubble. You could talk about, from an athletic standpoint or on the court, some of the feats of you know, Damian Lillard. Obviously, you have the Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers debacle. You have LeBron James, you know, being the man again and becoming Finals MVP. But there is also, you know, the teams deciding to not play ball after Jacob Blake was shot 7 times. And there's so many things that could go into that movie that not only make it impactful socially, but also entertaining from the aspect of the stars involved and the actual play on the court.
Yeah, really, the whole world was turned upside down on its head. Okay, we have another question, guys. Next up, we have a junior health science major, Dwight Martin.
My question today is, what type of impact will having Deion Sanders as the head coach of the Jackson State football team have on HBCU football in the future?
Well, I think the major thing about this is, I think the major thing about this thing is, Charlie, they're ranked in the top 100 in the recruiting class. I mean, that's huge and that's major in itself. Never has an HBCU been ranked this high as far as recruiting is concerned. And now you have a situation where he is improving the facilities, right? So much that goes into, whether it's Alabama, Clemson, and the LSU Tigers, is the facilities, the amenities, the auxiliaries, the things that are presented to these players that they like to see, that they feel like can get them to the next level. And anytime you have a guy like Deion Sanders, you think about some of these Power 5 or Division 1 guys who decide to enter the transfer portal, who want to be professional athletes. What better man to teach you than Deion Sanders, who's also assembled a staff of former NFL players or former pros, of men who understand leadership. And so I think having a guy like Deion also makes other schools step their game up, also makes other schools look to be the same or match what Jackson State is doing, because if they don't, they can't compete. And that ends up being a great thing for the student athlete.
The only thing I would add, the only thing I would add also is that it's rare that someone as great as Deion was in his sport, he played multiple sports, but in football in particular, winds up coaching anywhere. You know, Michael Jordan didn't coach anywhere. Tom Brady ain't going to coach, I don't think, right? Like, when you're on that level, when do you come back and coach? Deion Sanders is by so far the greatest corner ever. In fact, in terms of the peak of career, how great someone's been, when I think of Lawrence Taylor only before I think of Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
He was unlike anyone else. And for this dude to come back and coach, he wants to pay it forward. He wants to teach kids.
Yeah.
And then where he's coaching is significant. It's unusual and significant.
All right, guys, we have one more question from a Howard University student. This one comes from senior nursing student Amari Henry.
My question is, who is your favorite HBCU athlete of all time and why?
Max?
Favorite HBCU? I mean, I guess Jerry Rice would be the first name that comes to mind. You know, he was, before Tom Brady was the GOAT, Jerry Rice was the GOAT of football when I was growing up, because there was just no better answer. So he jumps to mind.
I'm going to go Steve McNair. And I have a lot of reasons for this. The first reason is my first cousin, his name was Gary Lewis, was actually the SWAC Defensive Player of the Year, and he went to Alcorn State. And at that time, that was the only college football games I had ever been to. And if you can imagine, you know, a very young man sitting next to the Alcorn State band and sitting next to the Golden Girls, who was the dance team, let's just say I probably only watched like two quarters of the game because I just watched the band and the dance team the entire time. And so to be in that atmosphere and to see how much it meant and see the pageantry of HBCU football, and then to have a guy like Steve McNair come along, who Steve McNair was the co-MVP with Peyton Manning in the league. He was also a guy who changed the game. He had a strong arm. He could move the pocket. Steve McNair was what? 3 yards away or 2 yards away from being a Super Bowl champion, and what he did on the field, but also what he did for HBCU quarterbacks, that, you know, you knew they were smart enough, you knew they were talented enough, and he showed you that he could do it in a way that was traditional, right? It wasn't Michael Vick, it wasn't Lamar Jackson, it wasn't Cam Newton. It was a guy that could stand in the pocket and had the type of arm strength, had the type of intelligence to play over a decade in this league and do it at an extremely high level.
Can I change my answer real quick, because something occurred to me. My favorite, my personal favorite's got to be Strahan. He helped deliver a Super Bowl to
the New York
football Giants.
I was going to say that to you, Max.
It's got to be Strahan. Yeah.
I was actually very surprised when you did not say Michael Strahan, because I did know that he went to an HBCU. Yeah. So
Jerry,
there you go.
Because HBCU, like the greatest comes to mind, that's Jerry Rice. But my personal favorite is Strahan.
100%.
It's got to be. Well, we want to give a huge thank you, big shout out to the students at Howard University. All of you have such bright futures ahead, and we want to thank you for submitting your questions. All right, well, we have one more topic we got to get to, guys. We touched on it earlier on in the show. It's Russell Wilson. The man really has had it up to here. Dating back to 2015, Russell Wilson has finished top five in sacks in six consecutive seasons. So when talking to reporters yesterday, he seemed to express a little bit of frustration in that. So let's listen to what he had to say.
The reality is that, you know, I've definitely been hit, you know, been sacked on almost 400 times, you know, and so we got to get better. I got to find ways to get better too. And so just continue to try to find that. You know, if you ask me about, the trust factor of it all, I mean, I've always, you know, put my trust in the Seahawks.
Fans are going to want to know, are you frustrated with the Seahawks?
I'm frustrated at getting hit too much. I'm frustrated with that part of it.
Max, what do you think? Are you surprised by Russell Wilson's comments about his offensive line?
I am a bit. I mean, he included himself and he can get rid of the ball faster, right? You know, like he included himself, but I am a bit. I'm a bit surprised by that. Mahomes also pointed after the game to his O-line. I'm surprised when quarterbacks do that. They have to rely on those guys. But I'm also a little surprised because the Seahawks had a pretty good offensive line once upon a time. Then they traded Max Unger, the center, remember that, for Jimmy Graham, and the line fell apart. Mm-hmm. They could still play defense, but they really weren't protecting them. I feel like in recent years, and they weren't investing anything in it in the draft, but then that started changing, and in recent years, I feel like this year, last year, the offensive line has gotten better, and really the issue's been the defense. So I'm a little surprised that he calls out guys on his side of the ball who, at least in my first impression when he said it, is I feel like the offensive line has played better for him recently. They have a little more talent on it. They've played better than they did, let's say, 3 or 4 years ago. It's really the defense that let them down. I was a bit surprised, Ryan.
Yeah, I was surprised by it, too, just because I'm used to Russell Wilson saying the right thing and that being important to him. And now I think when you start to kind of criticize your offensive line, and he didn't necessarily point to them specifically, but when you say you've been hit too much and you say you've been sacked too much, we all know and understand what that means. But throwing himself in there is kind of an afterthought. You know, it's like me playing free safety and being like, man, I'm tired of us getting bombed on. You know what I'm saying? We always getting beat deep outside. And, you know, like I could go tackle them after they catch it on them, but golly. You know, and so it's one of those things that we understand as a quarterback, you don't want to get hit. And if you start to think about your longevity in this league, you understand that as well individually, but you don't have to say it, right? If that's something that you think needs to be worked on, if that's something that you think you need to progress, go to John Schneider, go to Pete Carroll. And we have to remember the reason that Jimmy Graham was brought to Seattle was so Russell Wilson had an extra weapon. right? That was with the thought in mind that they were moving away from the Legion of Boom, moving away from being this physical running attack that was the way that they tried to win games, and saying, okay, we got a dude at quarterback that we've given a new contract. Let's roll with him. And that actually hasn't worked for him. And so we've seen, because of this offensive line, sometimes Russell Wilson make these amazing plays and scramble around and do some of the things we credit the Aaron Rodgers and the Patrick Mahomes with. But he's also taken some sacks. And so I think that's a team thing. But for me, when you're a guy like Russell Wilson, who we all perceive as the ultimate leader, right? It's not necessarily that we think he's the best leader ever, but we also can't point to other people who we believe are better leaders other than, you know, you say Tom Brady, except because he wins that way. And so and so
Ryan,
that's weird to me.
You bring up Tom Brady. You bring up Tom Brady. Consider how Brady led the offensive line really this season in a brand new situation. And I'll be okay, look. The Bucs have elite talent on the offensive line, and they were a top five offensive line basically all year. But they had that very bad game in Chicago. It's kind of washed over by the fact that Brady made that mental error at the end of the game. But until then, the offensive line was penalized heavily, and it was killing drives. And Brady was chewing those guys out, right? And look at how they wound up blocking for him in the Super Bowl, right? He was clean, pressured four times on 30 dropbacks, the best in his Super Bowl career. So there is some responsibility of a quarterback leading the line. And you hear about, like, quarterbacks buying Rolexes and stuff for you know, and taking them to dinner and stuff. Their offensive line, that ain't what Russell Wilson's doing. These aren't Rolexes he's handing out right now. You know, these guys are not getting A's on their report card from Russell Wilson in this statement.
Yeah, listen. I'm not one of those dudes that's critical of Tom Brady and the way he handles things. I'm only critical of the way that we approach the way Tom Brady handles things, as opposed to other people. When we're like, it's okay for Brady to act like this, but not okay for other quarterbacks. I'm not a fan of that. But I do feel that when Tom Brady is getting on his offensive line, when he's getting on his wide receivers, he's doing that as a leader. I have no issue with that. Like, I have no issue with heat of the battle stuff. But when you've had a month, right, since you lost the game to the Los Angeles Rams, to sit in your house and think, when you're making these statements and they aren't emotional, when you're a guy like Russell Wilson, who, one, I respect his intelligence, two, I know he's a good dude, you had an opportunity to internalize these things and think, and you still say them. Because we're smart enough to know that Russell Wilson understands the impact of these words. It's the reason he's never said anything that could be misconstrued or misunderstood to this point. It's the reason he's always focused on his perception. So this is strategic. Russell Wilson wants us to talk about this offensive line. Russell Wilson wants Seattle to do something. Russell Wilson wants to point out these things. I want to have more of a say-so in what's going on. Here is what all these other things say to me, too, though. One, they say that I'm worried about Russell Wilson's legacy. I'm worried about how Russell Wilson plays individually. Two, what it's saying publicly is, you know what? It really ain't me, y'all. It ain't me that we ain't won. Like, they don't let me say who could come in. They really ain't blocking for me like that. I'm trying to do all that I can. We need to get some more people in here. We need different people. Maybe if I get to say who we get, we'd be better. I'd be more protected. And that's
very strange, let me ask you one question.
Of the ordinary, out of character for him. Yo.
Who's going to protect you from Aaron Donald? Like, what are you going to get? You're going to clone Walter Jones and convince him to play defense, you know, on the interior of the line or something? Aaron Donald's coming to get you. That ain't even your offensive line's fault. It was not going to be stopped.
Hey, that's 100% true, man. When you play in the Los Angeles Rams, he's gonna get at you regardless. But I just think that even though we're moving to guys taking over their careers and guys having more input, they have to be smart about how they do it, and sometimes, especially a guy like Russell Wilson, who will be in Seattle.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks for a great show today. We recognize Howard University as part of our HBCU Wednesday. Next week, we got Morehouse College. But, guys, a lot going on the campus of Howard University today. So we want to wrap up the show with a look at the events there and say thank you to every single student at Howard University.
Come here, go anywhere, in truth and in service. Thank you, First Take, for celebrating the importance of historically Black colleges and universities, from the hilltop to the White House, from the Mecca to the big screens, from the HU to the you know. My name is Morgan Gibson. I am a junior chemical engineering major from Huntsville, Alabama, studying at the illustrious Howard University, where I have the honor and the privilege of serving as Miss College of Engineering and Architecture. Once a bison, always a bison.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.